Support for this podcast and the following message come from Massachusetts General Hospital, named the number one hospital on the East Coast by U.S. News and World Report. Mass General brings together the brightest minds in medicine to push the boundaries of what's possible in healthcare. Learn more at massgeneral.org.
Hey, I'm 1A Senior Producer Lindsay Foster Thomas. Before the show starts, I want to recommend Up First, the new morning news podcast from NPR. In 10 minutes or so, you'll get a sense of the stories and the big ideas of the day. Wake up with Up First. You'll find it tomorrow morning by 6 Eastern Time on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson. This is the 1A podcast from WAMU and NPR for Thursday, May 11th, 2017. It seems everyone has something to say about the dismissal of FBI Director James Comey.
Mr. President, with all due respect, you are making a big mistake.
If virtually every American thinks you botched an investigation, maybe that we need somebody else that can bring more confidence to the FBI.
I think all Trump has to do today is be quiet.
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
Comey was not fired because of Hillary. Comey was fired because of the Russians.
So he fires Comey yesterday. Who's he meet with today? He's meeting with the Soviet, the Russian foreign minister. I mean, what an epic troll this is.
The Comey firing has a shadow of your talk,
gentlemen. What's the fire?
The U.S. support.
Yes, you're kidding. You're kidding.
Clearly everyone has an opinion on this. Reports indicate that Mr. Comey asked for additional funding for the investigation into Russia's interference with the election just days before he got fired. Democrats and some Republicans have called for an independent investigator to take over the inquiry. President Trump has said little about firing Comey, except, as you heard, that the director was, in his view, not doing a good job. We'll consider what this episode means for the administration and for the country and what our options are to deal with it. Some are calling this a constitutional crisis, an abuse of power by the president that could threaten faith in our democracy. Others say it's a political crisis, bad for Republicans, but not for the republic. Is either side right? And what should we do now as a nation? Joining us in studio is Alexis Simmendinger, White House correspondent for Real Clear Politics. Alexis, glad to have you back on the program.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
We've got a lot of different points of view on this. Justin emailed us, constitutional crisis? You bet. Trump and his administration is scratching an itch and making it more red. We need to know what Comey possibly found, and I, for one, agree with the sentiment that an independent inquiry is necessary. Another listener tweeted, constitutional crisis? What a joke. There is zero evidence of collusion. The investigation does not end with Comey out, and he was incompetent anyway. So clearly people are of two different minds on this.
At least two.
At least, exactly, maybe three or four or more. What should we be keeping in mind as we consider what a constitutional crisis really is?
Well, I cover the White House, so from the perspective of where I sit and having covered previous presidents, the political crisis element is the part that I see right away, because the President of the United States has made clear in his rhetoric and his tweets his mixed views of what's taking place, his preoccupation with the political elements of this. And what I mean by that is that the president has made no secret of his discomfort that the investigations exploring Russia's interference with the election, which is supported on a bipartisan basis, undercuts the confidence in him and his victory in winning the White House. And he has been uncomfortable with that from the very beginning and focused on that. His focus on the ongoing investigations, and keep in mind, the investigations have expanded in the legislative branch. So we have, you know, almost half a dozen. We have the FBI investigation as well. And while the president has presided in 110 days or whatever it is, he has been very frustrated that his focus on the collusion element, which he keeps saying does not exist, he keeps maintaining, is a charade. is the element of the investigation when Congress is actually exploring, as the FBI has been, two sides. One is, what did the Russians do, and the alarm that the Russians are continuing and will continue, and then what is the evidence that there may be collusion, and so far we have not seen evidence.
Let's add a few more voices to the conversation. Joining us from NPR in New York is Michael Waldman, the president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law. Michael, welcome to 1A.
My pleasure.
Also with us is Professor Josh Blackman. He teaches constitutional law at the South Texas College of Law in Houston. He's also an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank in Washington, and he joins us from KUHF Public Radio in Houston. Professor Blackman, welcome.
Thanks for having me back.
And since we've been talking about special prosecutors and independent investigations, joining us here in studio is someone who understands firsthand what a special prosecutor's job is all about. Peter Zeidenberg was assistant special counsel in the prosecution of Scooter Libby for his part in leaking the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Peter Zeidenberg, glad to have you with us.
Good morning.
Peter, let me start with you. Could you explain to us in very simple terms the difference between a special prosecutor and an independent prosecutor and a select committee and all of these different options? What makes them different?
Well, right now, because the old special counsel law has expired in 1999, that was what the Ken Starr model was. He was a special prosecutor who was appointed by a three-judge panel by Attorney General, went to this three-judge panel, and they appoint the a prosecutor. That statute lapsed. In its stead is regulations promulgated by the Department of Justice at which, if it becomes necessary for a special counsel, the Attorney General has the authority to appoint a special counsel who would then investigate a case. In this circumstances that we're talking about, because the Attorney General is recused, that would fall to the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, and it would be up to him should he decide to get an independent counsel. He would appoint that individual, and that individual would be delegated authority. Now, the extent of that delegation is basically up to the Deputy Attorney General. So that in the case of Valerie Plame, Jim Comey was the Deputy Attorney General, and he appointed his former colleague and friend, Patrick Fitzgerald. And I was reviewing those letters of delegation, and he gave Pat Fitzgerald plenary powers. So he essentially made Pat Fitzgerald the Attorney General for that case. So there was any appeals, any questions, there was no other supervision. Pat Fitzgerald was the man.
I want to make sure I fully understand what you're saying. It sounds like you're saying that Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General under Jeff Sessions, could, if he wanted to, appoint someone with special prosecutorial power and design their job, basically say, this is your function, you have the power to do this, that, and the other, you don't have the power to do this thing and the other thing, and here's your goal, and here's how long you're working, and here's how much staff you get, go. He would have the power to do that.
Correct.
Gotcha.
And under the normal course in the regs, that special counsel is answerable to the person who appointed him, so either, in this case, it would be the Deputy Attorney General. So if the Deputy Attorney General said, you know what, you're getting too aggressive, you're getting too far afield, I don't like your approach, he could curb him in just like he would, you know, any boss talking to a subordinate.
And he would be within the regulations.
He would be within the regulations. In the case of Valerie Plame, that investigation, Scooter Libby investigation, that was not done. Deputy Attorney General Comey gave the special counsel plenary powers, which was he could do whatever he thought was appropriate. So, you know, it would be desirable in my view if that would be the model that would be followed by Mr. Rosenstein in this case.
Let me bring our two legal scholars into the conversation. Michael Waldman, what do you make of this talk about whether this is a constitutional crisis or a political crisis or a little bit of both or neither? How are you viewing this?
Well, at this moment, it is certainly a crisis, a grave crisis for the rule of law in this country. It could become a full-blown constitutional crisis. What do we know right now? We know that the democracy we all cherish was significantly affected by a hostile foreign power that intervened in our election. We know that the person leading the investigation, the law enforcement investigation, was fired just days after he asked for expanded authority and expanded resources to pursue the possible collusion between the president's campaign and that hostile foreign power. We know that the president has been attacking the investigation publicly, and according to this morning's Washington Post with 30 sources, privately saying, this is why I want to fire this guy, please come up with a reason. We know that Jeff Sessions, his attorney general, had to recuse himself because he lied to Congress about his contacts with the Russians. And it turns out he didn't recuse himself because he was talking to President Trump about how to fire the head of the FBI. We know that the head of the Trump campaign had to resign because of this issue, Paul Manafort. We know that Roger Stone has been bragging that he's been urging and talking to the White House about firing the investigator, when Stone is obviously somebody who's in the investigation crosshairs in some way.
Michael, it sounds like what you're getting at is that there's an awful lot of smoke for there not to be a fire. Is that what you're getting at?
If we believe that the rule of law applies to everybody, including the president, then there must be a way to have a fair, respected, and independent investigation. The actions of this week have gravely undermined that, and there is a remedy, which is the appointment of an independent counsel, as has happened over and over again in other administrations.
Professor Blackman, what do you think of this, about the nature of this crisis, what kind of crisis it is, and also what could be done about it?
The answer here is actually quite simple. To have a constitutional crisis, the Constitution must be violated, and President Trump has not violated the Constitution. He was well within his powers to remove President Comey for no reason at all. He could have removed him because he didn't like his hair. The fact that he actually gave a list of reasons, whether they're true or not, is actually superfluous. But the more important question is, in our republic, is it really that strange for one coordinate branch of government to have an exclusive power? And the answer is actually no. Decades ago, Justice Scalia wrote one of the most famous dissents of all time in a case called Morrison v. Olson that discusses this independent counsel statute. True, it was a dissent, but it's really become the definitive opinion. Justice Kagan recently observed that it gets better year after year. And Scalia asks, is it really unthinkable that the president should have such exclusive power, even when alleged crimes by him or his close associates are at issue? And Scalia says no. Congress can pass laws that benefit themselves. Judges can hear cases affecting their own salary. In our separation of powers, it happens that we accept this risk, that it can be abused. And the fact of the matter is, this is where we are. This is a political question. Congress can conduct hearings. They can conduct investigations. DOJ can appoint a special prosecutor, which is not truly independent because it's under the auspices of DOJ.
Right.
But this is something that works well within our constitutional framework.
Well, Alexis Simondinger, I wonder if this really hinges on the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. I mean, President Trump was within his authority as the president of the United States to call for Director Comey to be fired, but to a lot of Americans, it just smells bad. It just kind of rubs at that feeling that this is not the way that government is supposed to work. How much of that is part of the larger conversation on Capitol Hill, in the halls of power, in terms of what to do from here?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the investigations on Capitol Hill and in the FBI, presumably by all assertions that we know of as today, are continuing and will continue. We know that there are Republicans who are joining with Democrats on Capitol Hill to probe what it was that Russia was doing and Trump's business ties, President Trump's alleged potential business ties to Russia. And that will continue. It has made the White House chafe and the president very uncomfortable, as I was saying earlier. But what we're watching at the White House is his the political blowback that he is engaging in. And I think Congresswoman Speer was correctly identifying that when it is politically uncomfortable for members of both parties to be confronting with the president's decisions and the ramifications of the decisions is usually when the pressure rises up on the White House to make adjustments or make changes. President Trump up to this point has suggested that he is taken aback, surprised that Democrats would so quickly be jumping up and down and saying that the director of the FBI, who they themselves may have criticized in the past, suddenly is their hero. And I find that stunning in a way, covering them, because the White House team is usually very quick to say that Democrats are no friends of President Trump and that everything that he does will be criticized. So the president's umbrage at this and surprise and discomfort is a little bit surprising.
Kristen emailed us, can you or your guests define constitutional crisis as it applies to this situation? Professor Blackman, I'd be interested in your take on this. It seems like you don't believe that this is a constitutional crisis, but what would be a constitutional crisis?
I'll give you a good example of a constitutional crisis that actually arose from the firing. After the Civil War and the assassination of President Lincoln, Andrew Johnson came to power. And Andrew Johnson tried to fire Lincoln's holdover Secretary of War, a guy by the name of Stanton. The Senate said, no, you can't fire him because you need our permission. So the Senate says you can't fire him. The president said you did. This was actually the basis of the impeachment over Andrew Johnson, and it hinged on a differing interpretation of the Constitution. Could the president fire the Secretary of War? There was a legitimate debate, was this constitutional? And we nearly lost a precedent. He was nearly removed from office, but save for one vote. Remember, JFK's profile encouraged that was the one vote. That's a very important constitutional crisis where Republican hinge. Here, Comey was fired, people are upset. Life goes on. We'll have hearings. We'll have investigations. There'll be a confirmation hearing for Comey's replacement, all within the confines of our constitutional order. In no sense does this rise to the level where people on the streets and mobs and tanks and pitchforks. We're not there, not even close.
Michael Waldman, what do you think?
I think that that is I think the question of whether it's a constitutional crisis is a bit of a minute dissection of words. It's a crisis for our democracy. It's a crisis for the system of checks and balances that we have. And it's a crisis for the rule of law. Maybe it'll be a full-blown constitutional crisis if things keep going the way they are, but right now it's pretty bad already. Again, I think that I didn't even think it was necessary to have an independent counsel until this week. One thing we care about a lot that is deeply embedded in our Constitution is that the law applies to everyone. And while the president has the right to fire the head of the FBI, it cannot be done if it is part of an attempt to cover up something that the president himself is involved in. Richard Nixon had the power to fire Archibald Cox. But everybody knew that was part of a cover-up of major crimes.
Well, but I do understand Professor Blackman's argument, though, that even though Richard Nixon fired Archibald Cox and the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General resigned in what we, you know, the Saturday Night Massacre, Richard Nixon still got removed from office. He still resigned. The Watergate investigation still went on. I do understand the argument that says it would be a constitutional crisis if our system of law broke down in the face of what's happening, but so far, it really hasn't.
Well, it is by the side of the road with less steam coming out of the engine, but maybe we'll get going again. Here's what we need to know to make sure that it doesn't break down. First, that the investigation is continuing strongly. It's great that people are able to say it is. We don't know that. We only know the guy in charge of it was fired because he was pressing it. We need to know, second, that what happened in Watergate happened, which is that structures are established to enable an independent investigation to move forward. We don't know that that's happened. It hasn't happened yet. The third thing, most significantly, was you asked earlier about should there be congressional investigations. The answer is yes. There already are. They've been sputtering along, although there's some evidence that maybe they're gathering steam. Certainly that was a key part of what happened in Watergate. it's right that this is not merely something for prosecutors to be looking at it behind closed doors, but this is a public question. And Congress needs to step up. I think that this is really a question as much for Congress and for members of Congress of both parties. Will they live out their oath to the office, not just their own party?
Let me bring Alexis back.
That's the political blowback that Trump probably wasn't counting on.
Let's bring Alexis back in, and then we'll come back to you, Peter. Alexis?
One thing I wanted to add to what Michael is saying is that we're early in the fact gathering about this. One of the things that has concerned people, and I'm sure you've gotten emails about this, is that if the president does not understand and someone has not made clear to him as a someone who came from business and had no political or governing experience before, what obstruction of justice is or looks like, the president would then be confronting not only a political problem and political criticism, but obviously what Michael's warning could happen. And why I mention obstruction of justice is because if the president's desire is to shut down the investigation at the FBI by removing the director, starving the FBI for funds, denying maybe the expansion of staff, or in some way he urged Comey directly, I want you to shut this down, I want you to end it, that could be perceived as obstruction of justice, and then we're into a different set of facts.
Susan emailed a very good question. Will Mr. Comey himself be testifying in any of these investigations? Seems like he's capable of spilling a lot since he no longer has to worry about losing his job. I tend to doubt it, but I'd like to get your perspectives on that on the other side of the break as we continue discussing the firing of FBI Director James Comey and what the nation should do about it now.
Support for this NPR podcast and this message come from MSNBC, because information and facts have never been more important. Each day, news and politics seem to move faster than ever. Each weeknight on MSNBC, Chris Hayes, Rachel Maddow, Lawrence O'Donnell, and MSNBC's team of journalists bring you the most important news of the day, with insight and perspective that allows you to make up your mind and know that you're in the know. Weeknights beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC. Support also comes from Morgan Stanley. Your son has a gift for gymnastics. Your daughter has her eye on a little startup in the Valley. And you want to retire early. How do you create a wealth plan that reflects all the complexity of a modern family? Start with a financial advisor who understands individuals and knows how to bring families together around both shared and personal goals. More information at morganstanley.com/conversations. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC, member SIPC.
Hi, this is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. This month marks Fresh Air's 30th anniversary as a daily NPR interview program. That means our show is older than two of the people who work on it. So, how are we celebrating? By doing more shows. You can find our podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Back now to our conversation with Michael Waldman of NYU's Brennan Center for Justice, South Texas College of Law Professor Josh Blackman, Alexis Simmendinger of Real Clear Politics, and Peter Zeidenberg, a partner at Arent Fox and former assistant special counsel in the prosecution of Scooter Libby. Susan emailed us, will Comey himself be testifying in any of these investigations? Seems like he's capable of spilling a lot since he no longer has to worry about losing his job. Peter Zeidenberg, what do you think?
I think it's very likely that he will. In fact,
very likely.
I'd be surprised if he didn't. In particular, they are going to have, I think, a lot of questions. One being the letter used to fire him, in which the president claims that Comey cleared him on three separate occasions, which I find to be fairly preposterous. James Comey would not, it's almost unimaginable to me that he would have said anything like that. There has been no corroboration. It's been asked by a lot of White House spokespeople the last few days. No one seems to know about it, and I'd be willing to bet it never happened.
Just before you keep going, here's the segment from that letter that you're referring to. This is from the firing letter from President Trump to former FBI Director James Comey. And he writes, in part, quote, "While I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation, I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau. It is essential that we find new leadership for the FBI that restores public trust and confidence in its vital law enforcement mission. I wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors, Donald J. Trump." Unquote. Go ahead, Peter.
There is no way, in my view, that a prosecutor or an investigator would be, at this stage of the proceedings, be in a position where they could inform a potential subject of an investigation of their status. It just wouldn't happen. I think Director Comey, former Director Comey, would be delighted to lay that falsehood to rest. I think that the circumstances of his firing would be of great interest, and his requests that he made to the government, to DOJ and to Congress for greater resources, and whether that was the real instigation. So I think there'll be a lot of questions to Director Comey that he will feel more than free to answer. Going back to Michael Waldman's point about the necessity for Congress to be involved, I couldn't agree more. The independent counsel, I think would be a great, an important tool. He's a prosecutor. He or she is a prosecutor. They investigate and they prosecute if they find a crime. They don't make a public pronouncement. They don't do a Comey-style press conference about everything they've done, what they have found, who they've looked at, why they're not bringing charges, why they are bringing certain charges. So they could investigate for 3.5 years, find insufficient evidence to bring a case, and just walk away. There'd be no report, there would be no trail, and the public would be left not knowing what the heck is going on. So it certainly is not sufficient to get an independent counsel. It's necessary, but not sufficient.
Does that maybe speak to the possibility of what Congresswoman Speer was talking about? She said that there was an option for Congress. I think maybe she meant something more like a select committee.
I think a select committee is probably the best they're going to do. A 9/11 style commission would require legislation. And I can't imagine, since the president says this is all fake anyway, and it's a bogus waste of time, I can't imagine that he would sign any legislation supporting a commission.
We've got plenty of good questions from our listeners. Keep them coming. We still have time before the hour is up to talk further about what the country does now after the firing of FBI Director James Comey, whether or not this is a constitutional crisis, a political crisis, or a crisis at all. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Brian wrote on our website, the1A.org, "Actually, a shrewd move on behalf of the Republican senators who are advocating for a special prosecutor is to suggest Sally Yates. Now, there is someone above reproach. Alexis Simmendinger, do we know anything about some of the names that are being floated for this? Granted, as Peter said, this could take a lot of different forms, but are any names bubbling up?"
Well, there's all kinds of names being floated to succeed Director Comey and also to get involved in the investigations. But a lot of the names are pulled out of the air in terms of having experience with the FBI or having extensive respected legal experience. I know there's also some political jujitsu that's going on. For instance, Senator Lee was saying that perhaps Merrick Garland should be the name that the president puts out there, which...
That would be interesting.
Yeah. That was a political effort to checkmate the Democrats, right?
Right. Merrick Garland, President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, yes, who the Republicans would not allow to come to
appeals
a hearing.
Court judge. Right. So in this particular case, there are a lot of names out there, and there were from the very beginning. But I think that it's very clear that the president had not focused on a successor to former Director Comey, which was stunning in and of itself. His focus was on terminating his service, and has only begun to focus on that. There are those urging the president to focus on choosing someone soon to maybe even in the next few days. There's some suggestion the president may go to the FBI on Friday to try to buck up or show his camaraderie with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So the president seems to be trying to do some mop-up here, politically speaking.
One of our listeners wrote on our text network, if there's a deadline for the government to appoint a new FBI director, do we know if there's any, if they're on any kind of clock, or I don't think they are.
No, because the vacancy was filled by naming an acting, and so therefore, you know, there is someone serving in that position.
Kathy emailed us, it was said yesterday that an independent prosecutor would stop any and all existing investigations. Is that true? And if so, is that a bad or good or excellent idea? Peter, I don't think it would. Would it stop the previous probes or?
It wouldn't stop it. It would basically what you'd have is this. Certainly, this is what happened with the Valerie Plame Scooter Libby investigation. The agents and the lawyers working on it just had a new boss. So it Pat Fitzgerald could have chosen to start afresh, gotten rid of everybody, found new lawyers, new investigators. That would have stopped everything in its tracks and been incredibly disruptive. But if you follow the model that he took, which I think would be wise, is you've just got a new leader, but everyone else stays in place and the work continues and the disruption can be minimized.
Shelby emailed us, whether this is a constitutional crisis will depend on the definitions of obstruction of justice and abuse of power. Is there a point at which the leaders of the Senate and the House can be accused of obstruction of justice if they fail to address these responsibilities? Michael Waldman, what do you think? Professor Blackman, I'd like to hear from you too, but Michael, what do you think?
As a legal matter, I don't think so. I think that is, unless as a legal matter, obstruction of justice is a crime, and unless the members of Congress themselves were involved in some conspiracy, I don't think they would themselves stand in risk of indictment in a court of law. But in the court of public opinion, failure to do what they need to do, insistence on looking away, will really hurt any member of Congress in the end who doesn't do their job. There have been many, many other examples throughout history where Congress has investigated, even while there's been ongoing investigations. That's been true for both parties. And I think that is, among other things, the standard we need to be asking them to live up to.
Professor Blackman, what do you think?
Ultimately, the decisions that Congress makes will be addressed at the ballot box, not in a criminal court. So if members of Congress decide not to take this seriously, then the voters can throw the bums out of office. And if the American people decide not to throw the bums out of office, they're okay with a corrupt president, then we have much greater problems. But if I may, in the note of Merrick Garland, I have a more radical suggestion, mostly in jest, but Chief Justice Roberts. This is someone who has infuriated both Democrats and Republicans alike, and he would make a wonderful FBI director appointment and give perhaps Donald Trump another Supreme Court vacancy to fill.
Wait. Are you talking about taking Chief Justice John Roberts off the Supreme Court and making him the head of the FBI? Would you like a lifetime job or would you like a 10-year job? Really?
I wrote this mostly in jest, but after J. Edgar Hoover died, there was actually rumors that Byron White, a justice, will be appointed to the Supreme Court. So it's not insane. Mike Lee's tweet a moment ago about Merrick Garland made me think, why stop the D.C. Circuit, go all the way up to the top and get the Chief Justice to help put our Republican our institutions back in check?
I don't know. If I was the Chief Justice of the United States and the president came to me and said, would you like to be the director of the FBI? I would just be like, you know what? I'll just leave. You don't have to tell me you don't like me and offer me the most poisonous job in Washington right now. But
there's a precedent. Lyndon Johnson wanted to create a seat in the Supreme Court so he could appoint a crony. He persuaded Justice Arthur Goldberg to leave the court, told him, only you can end the Vietnam War. I'm going to have you negotiate it. He made him UN ambassador. As soon as he got off the court, Johnson never took his phone calls again. So there's a lesson there.
And one more. President Johnson wanted to put Thurgood Marshall in the Supreme Court. So how did he do it? There was Justice Tom C. Clark. Johnson appointed Clark's son, Ramsey Clark, as Attorney General. Conflict of interest. The justice resigned. Thurgood Marshall in the court. So there is machinations. This will be the true art of the deal if Trump can go to the Johnson level of deal making.
Wow. This kind of, Peter, makes me I don't know. I just kind of feel sorry for whoever gets this job now. This is just, it feels tremendously poisonous, and it feels like maybe you can speak to this as being part of a special prosecution, that when you walk in the room, it's like the principal's in class. Like, everybody knows you're looking for trouble or signs thereof. It can't be a fun job.
Well, it's a challenging, and so, you know, if you're a prosecutor, it is a fun job. That's what you do. But I agree with you in this context. It's fraught. I mean, Rod Rosenstein enjoyed up till the day before yesterday a sterling reputation. You would not find anyone in the legal community who had a negative thing and almost universally great things to say about him. And now, 2 weeks later, after being part of the administration, you know, I wouldn't say his reputation's in tatters, but it's certainly questioned. And there, what I read in the Washington Post late last night was that he's already threatened to resign because this is being put in his lap, and apparently he feels unfairly. So he's gone in 2 weeks from the top of the legal profession to someone who's, you know, fighting these slings and arrows already being directed his way for the first time in his 27-year legal career. And I can only imagine whoever's going to take the next FBI job is going to be in for the same type.
Another listener wrote via text message, "Does anyone know how James Comey is taking this? He was acting like he thought he was untouchable. He must be in shock." Alexis, do we know how he's doing now?
Well, he had a long plane ride back from Los Angeles after he found out in Los Angeles that he'd been fired by watching television. There's reports that he was puttering in his yard, his garden, yesterday in Virginia. He sent the FBI employees, his former colleagues, a letter commending them, trying not to comment or dwell. He encouraged them not to dwell on what had happened to remove him, but saluted them and their work and encouraged them to keep it up. And he told them, "I'll be fine." So one would imagine former Director Comey had a very prominent public image, and one assumes that he'll find a way to continue that.
Greta emailed us, "My liberal friends, those who were hysterical in the wake of the election, now say that Comey's firing is quote-unquote proof that Trump is a Russian agent who feared the FBI is getting close to exposing his collusion. And they're not alone. Supposedly responsible government officials trade in this kind of silly conspiracy theorizing, too. It's like the country has lost all sense of balance and perspective. What on earth are we coming to?" Michael, what would you say to Greta?
I would say that, unpleasant as it is, we have to stare in the face the facts that we're living through something we have not lived through in a long time, if ever. There's every reason that James Comey would be surprised by being fired. It's never happened before like this. Only one other time in the modern FBI was an FBI director removed, and that was after a long investigation of his expense accounts and ethics and a real process. There's never been an FBI director who thought he could get fired because the investigation he was doing was getting too close to the president. Again, not since Watergate. So that's not alarmism, but it is alarmed. This is pretty serious. This is not a drill, and as uncomfortable as it makes any of us, and I don't relish this either. I was certainly didn't like what Comey did during the campaign any more than anybody else did. This just rises to a real level of seriousness. And, you know, someone said earlier, well, are people going to be on the streets protesting, that kind of thing? The only reason that there was a second special prosecutor in Watergate was because there was an eruption from the public. There were a million telegrams in those days. That was a lot of tweets. There was a revolt by the public who saw this for what it was. And I think it's important that people in power understand how this looks to the rest of the country.
Alexis, I wonder what we expect going forward from this. As we speak, the Senate Intelligence Committee is holding a hearing right now, one of its regularly scheduled hearings. Of course, the investigation into whether or not Russia interfered with the election of a sovereign democratic nation is still underway. Lots going on in the background. What's the next step in all this?
Well, there's a couple things we're watching. Obviously, is the president going to name his nominee? What will be the blowback on Capitol Hill? Democrats have said that they're going to slow walk or protest moving that nominee forward. the president and the Republicans on Capitol Hill are worried about the policy agenda. The president seems to be less engaged with that and more obsessed with this. But Republicans on Capitol Hill are really nervous about that because if they legislate, they have to do it this year and 2018. So we're going to see going into the spring and summer much more entanglement.
That's Alexis Simmendinger, White House correspondent for Real Clear Politics. Alexis, thanks for spending the hour with us.
It's great.
Professor Josh Blackman teaches constitutional law at the South Texas College of Law in Houston. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Waldman, president of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
And Peter Zeidenberg, a partner in the law firm Arendt Fox. Peter, thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's podcast. Also today, I spoke with pediatricians about what the Republican effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act might mean for children. We also spent some time talking about late-night comedy and political commentary with Jo Miller. She's the head writer for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. You'll find those programs online at the1a.org. That's the word the1a.org. Please do share this episode with someone and keep the conversation going. If you like it, please rate it and review it. And you can always reach us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening.